I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. I've got the microphone offering up a safe space for the independent thinkers out there, beholden to no party, no politician. Lots to get to today. Let's start off with some financial stuff today. Matt Taibbi's got a great piece out. Really just kind of, you know, Matt Taibbi is a, I guess you'd consider him a progressive or maybe an old-timey liberal guy, but I find him to be pretty honest. But he does great reporting on financial issues. And the left that used to be kind of fellow travelers with him seem to be ignoring exactly what's happening in this country right now, particularly around all of the COVID protocols and everything else that have just been massively enriching the elites in this country. I've been talking about it since March of last year when I saw what they were starting to do with shutting down businesses and bailing out airlines and bailing out banks. Now, I knew that the financial system was already in some trouble long before we even heard the name COVID-19. And so I was pretty fascinated to see how these, essentially we did a Wall Street bailout. And I believe that certainly was one of the reasons we saw the hysteria we saw last spring. But anyway, we'll get to Matt Taibbi's piece and other news today. My quotes of the day today, I ran across a chunk of Julian Assange quotes. And this is the same Julian Assange currently rotting in a British prison right now as they try to slow kill him. Trump's administration having floated the ideas of actually assassinating him or kidnapping him. And Trump left without pardoning him. It's one of the big sore points I have with Donald Trump. If he had a chance to bust apart the deep state, Julian Assange might have been a nice guy to have on your side. Instead, he allowed Mike Pompeo to persecute the guy. But anyway, Julian Assange has got some quotes. And listen up to you Facebookers. Julian Assange said, "We all only live once, so we are obligated to make good use of the time that we have and to do something that is meaningful and satisfying. This is something that I find meaningful and satisfying." And I guess he's talking about WikiLeaks. He said, "That is my temperament. I enjoy creating systems on a grand scale, and I enjoy helping people who are vulnerable, and I enjoy crushing bastards." Julian Assange, one of the few people actually exposing the corruption in governments around the world until we had him locked up. Another Julian Assange quote, "What are the differences between Mark Zuckerberg and me? I give private information on corporations to you for free, and I'm a villain. Zuckerberg gives your private information to corporations for money, and he's man of the year." And Julian Assange also said about Facebook, he said, "Facebook is the most appalling spying machine that has ever been invented." I mean, I'm telling you, between Facebook and bringing in the Alexas and the Google Homes, and I guess Facebook has got their new Facebook portal. Something about the name Portal. I've been seeing these ads recently. I don't know if this is a new product or not because I'm not inviting one of these things into my home, but something about calling it Facebook Portal I find very creepy. Commercials look like it's just a great connector between grandchildren and grandparents, but I got to tell you, I don't want anything from Facebook that's called a portal in my house. And final quote of the day, Mark Twain said, "Never argue with stupid people because they will drag you down to their level and then beat you with experience." And there's a difference, you know, between arguing with stupid people and arguing with ignorant people. I've never really thought deeply about the difference between stupidity and ignorance. Ignorance is really just lack of knowledge on something. Stupidity is just the inability to even acquire knowledge Most people that we know that we disagree with are ignorant of one thing or another, and there are many things that I'm ignorant of, too, that people can certainly teach me. But stupid people, there's just not a whole lot of help for. The job of everybody is to determine, you know, which your friends are, stupid or ignorant. The ignorant can be informed and possibly change their mind. The stupid, yeah, we probably need to leave them alone. Matt Taibbi. I guess this is a quote of the day because it got me looking at Matt Taibbi's article, or I pulled it from the article. Matt Taibbi's quote in this recent article is, "America is a sinking ship and its CEO class is trying to salvage the wreck in advance, extracting every last dime before battlefield Earth breaks out." And I'm going to read you just a little bit here of Matt Taibbi's piece because it is just one of these things that it's 18 months now. I've been looking around and saying, is anybody else noticing this? Who are the big winners from this pandemic as we out here fight over vaccines, we fight about masks, we fight over the school boards, we fight about all of these different things, and I'm just looking at this elite class, and Matt Taibbi did a good job of kind of drawing attention to some of these numbers. The setup for his article was about the Rittenhouse trial. Because, you know, Rittenhouse is the latest distraction. It's the latest thing to try to divide us. It's the latest thing that everybody has to get on either side of. I'm certainly on Team Rittenhouse. I haven't really talked about it on the show because everybody else is talking about it. And I don't have anything really much to add to the conservative position that this poor kid was defending himself and certainly should be found not guilty, at least on manslaughter or murder. But he brings this up, and again, this is Matt Taibbi, who's a leftist progressive guy. He's looking at this and saying, you know, here it is where everybody's going to start fighting over the Rittenhouse stuff. Everybody's tense and poised for the verdict in the Rittenhouse trial right now. Regardless of which way it goes, there's going to be even more agitation of society again. As everybody's doing this, Matt Taibbi points out to what's going on in the background. He said, on the day the Rittenhouse trial began, the financial data from Factsheet released an eyebrow-raising report about the COVID-19 economy. The firm noted that the companies in the S&P 500 were set to post a net 12.9% profit in the third quarter of 2021. They pointed out that this was the second highest result since the firm began tracking the number in 2008. The only better result? The previous quarter. The second quarter of 2021, when net profits soared at 13.1% overall. Taibbi goes on to say, these results track with the true great story of the pandemic era, which not so mysteriously hasn't made the news much. While Americans have been tearing each other's faces off over issues like race and vaccination policy, the massive widening of our already obscene wealth gap. He said, remember last year's long summer of riots, that period that saw the whole world arguing over the definition of mostly peaceful and saw Rittenhouse go charging through the streets of Kenosha? During that long stretch of unrest, corporate America, which had been headed for a depression in March of 2020, was soaring above the fray on an apparently endless and endlessly escalating ride to record profits. Corporate profits in the second quarter of 2020 sat at $1.58 trillion. One year later, that number was $2.69 trillion, a roughly 71% increase. How many stories have you read in the last year telling you about how well the top end of the income distribution has been doing while the rest of the country seemed to be falling apart? Compared with how often you hear pundits rage about the quote, insurrection, unquote, how regularly did you hear that the billionaire wealth has risen 70% or $2.1 trillion since the pandemic began? How much did you hear about last year's accelerated payments to defense contractors who immediately poured the rescue cash into buyback orgy, or about the record underwriting revenues for banks in 2020, or the, quote, embarrassment of profits, unquote, for health carriers in the same year? Or the huge rises in revenue for pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson, all during a period of massive net job losses. The economic news at the top hasn't just been good, it's been record-setting good during a time of severe cultural crisis. And that's the result of a corporate media, a Wall Street media, that understands that there is just absolutely no way they get away with this type of stuff if we are not agitated and at each other's throats, if we were paying attention. And I'll go back to what the quote from this that drew me to this Matt Taibbi piece. America is a sinking ship, and its CEO class is trying to salvage the wreck in advance, extracting every last dime before battlefield Earth breaks out. Man, oh man, if we ever redirected our rage in the right direction. I'll be right back.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
One of the greatest benefits to me personally of this show is that I don't have to carry water for anybody. I am that outsider. I'm not carrying water for the Republican Party. I am just in direct opposition to the Democratic Party on everything. I didn't have to carry water for Donald Trump and did not. I don't carry water for anybody because it can make you look really absurd. We're going to get to a clip in just a second of some of your media elites, particularly Stephanie Ruhle at NBC. She is their financial analyst at MSNBC, and you really make yourself look like a jackass when you have to carry water for something that is just inherently stupid or bad. There's a report on NPR is going to play a couple of clips from where they talk about this inflation. This is something that we're all seeing, and I continually point out it's Republicans paying higher prices, it's Democrats paying higher prices, it's blacks paying higher prices, and whites paying higher prices. But y'all keep on fighting among yourselves. I'm sure that'll fix everything. But this is NPR did a report on this inflation, and they interviewed a couple of, you know, just kind of normal people.
Everything costs more now. Eating, traveling, living, prices for just about everything are on the rise. Inflation in October was the highest it's been in more than three decades, and that chops away at people's buying power. It is especially hard and those who didn't have a lot of extra money to start with, and NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
Bernice Rink didn't need this week's inflation report to know prices are getting painfully high. Rink can see it every time she goes to the supermarket.
Oh, my God. You can hardly buy groceries.
Rink is retired and lives in Washington, D.C. Her monthly Social Security benefit is about average, a little over $1,500. It doesn't go as far as it used to. Chicken prices in October were up nearly 9% from a year ago. Beef and pork prices have climbed even more. Energy prices are among the biggest drivers of inflation. Rink's paying about 50% more for gasoline now than she did a year ago, and 28% more for the natural gas that she uses to heat her house.
Yeah, we're about to see. I think maybe this next clip, they talk about some of these energy prices around the country. I thank goodness for little old Mississippi and our mild winters down here. I have a tendency to get chilly. It's one of my more masculine qualities. So I even this winter is a little unbearable to me for a few weeks a year, but I just can't imagine what kind of money is going to be taken out of the economy of the northern states. As you hear, I think they're going to give you some of the increases in energy cost for, you know, heating homes this year. But so we've got that one woman who says, oh, my God, she's retired. I've got to the grocery store. Can barely buy anything anymore. We've got another interview here with another guy who lives with his 94-year-old mom. So I'm just giving you kind of the, and this is not anything new to anybody. All of us are experiencing these kinds of things. Pretty amazed at what one sack of groceries at the grocery store costs. But it's just interesting to hear these people on this NPR report. And then we're going to juxtapose it with Stephanie Ruhle, the financial analyst at MSNBC. You know, MSNBC. That loving leftist network that's just all for the little people? Yeah, we'll play her in just a second, but here's the second part of the NPR clip.
Bills are likely to be even higher this winter for people who heat their homes with oil, like Nick Apodiakis in Boston. Heating oil prices are up 59% from a year ago.
Ouch.
That stings for Apodiakis, who shares the house with his 94-year-old mother, Rose.
For my mom, even if it's 100 degrees out, she's still cold. But now it's really more cold.
Rosa Podiakis also gets Social Security. And like others on the program, her benefits will increase next year by 5.9%. That's the biggest cost of living adjustment in four decades. But as Nick notes, the actual cost of living has already gone up even more.
Before, you go to the store, and if you had $100, you could buy four bags of groceries and be happy. Now, if you're lucky to get a bag, milk, orange juice, eggs, plus the oil for the house, the water bills, it's just crazy. It's just so much money. How is somebody supposed to survive?
No, don't worry about it. Stephanie Ruhle will explain to you how you get through all of this stuff. So this is Stephanie Ruhle on MSNBC. She's talking to, I forget this guy's name, and it really doesn't matter.
See, as you say, inflation's over 6%, numbers we haven't seen in more than 30 years. So how much higher can these prices go, and when do you see them coming down?
I'll go ahead and tell you right now when prices are coming down. Never. They're not coming back down. They are saying that maybe inflation will moderate. Of course, they told us it was only going to be a few months anyway, and we've certainly seen that that's not true, but there is not a single person out there telling you that prices are going to come back down.
Well, listen, Willie, nobody knows exactly when they're going down, but you have to put all this in perspective.
I do. Never.
Perspective. This inflation is not in isolation, and the government predicted it was going to be a challenging recovery, all tied to COVID. So it's
no. Tied to the response to COVID. But it's also, of course, the endless money printing that's been going on, particularly for the last 13 years and really for the last 50. Well, they, again, like every other media outlet, will never explain that to people.
Why you see things like that expanded child tax credit. You've got the families of over 60 million kids on average getting $430 a month. For people on fixed incomes, older people on Social Security, they're getting those fixed payments adjusted next year up 5.9% for inflation. And the dirty little secret here, Willie, while nobody likes to pay more, on average, we have the money to do so. Household savings hit a record high over the pandemic. We didn't really have anywhere to go out and spend. And as we said a moment ago, we're expecting retail sales this holiday season to break records. For those who own their homes, the value of our homes are up. And while the stock market isn't the economy, you got over half of American households with some investment in the markets, and the markets have hit record highs. So we need to put all of this in perspective. This time last year, when you and I were talking, Willie, nobody had a vaccine. Now 200 million Americans do, and we're seeing this push of demand, and that's pushing up pricing.
Yeah, so Stephanie Ruhle says the dirty little secret about all of this inflation is Americans can afford it. We are all fat and happy with cash. As I said, this is why I think it's beautiful for me personally. I never have to look like a jackass like Stephanie Ruhle because I don't have to carry water for the Biden administration. I don't have to do it for the Trump administration. I don't have to try to explain these things to let my Wall Street buddies off of the hook. Well, Stephanie Ruhle does. So these two people whining in that NPR report, why don't they just look in their bank accounts? Apparently they are just got stacks on stacks. I talk about the savings rate in this country. Yeah, that does happen when you start sending out unsolicited checks from the government. They just start loading up lower-income Americans' accounts. And I can't wait to see what happens next year. You know, this income tax credit, my understanding of it is just what most people put on their taxes every year that either reduces their liability or gets them a big, fat refund. Instead, they're front-loading this. They're going ahead and they're writing you checks, so you won't get that deduction. It's going to bite everybody next April 15th or whenever people file their taxes. We're going to see stories in January and February. The poor car places that depend on income tax refund season to boost new car sales or used car sales, these checks aren't going to be coming next year. Inflation will still be here, but they have just front-loaded this by sending everybody these checks. My children are 20. I've never seen one of these checks. I haven't seen a check from the U.S. Treasury since COVID started, so I don't know of what I speak, really. But that's Stephanie Ruhle telling you, look, dirty little secret about inflation is this is no big deal. No big deal at all. We can all afford it. The stock market is poised to hit all-time highs, too, so that's beautiful. I do want to point this out, though. This woman that Biden has put up for comptroller of the U.S. currency, she is a clear and present danger. I mean, she is about as bad as it gets. And that's saying something in the Biden administration. She is really bad. And I ran across kind of a long speech by her talking about what they're going to be doing. It was all about Green New Deal stuff, and they're going to essentially start up funds that are taxpayer funded, but we're going to get a return on infrastructure spending, and we're going to borrow money from the Fed. It was so convoluted. It is just a true remaking of the economy. And essentially it was a big word salad that I didn't think would be great for radio, but it just shows where all of this money from this Green New Deal type stuff is going to come from and who's going to benefit. And it's going to be, no surprise to anybody, the Wall Street elites. There's going to be a bunch of money borrowed to do these kinds of infrastructure projects or social engineering projects. And these bonds, to hear this woman explain it, these bonds are going to be sold and then parsed up just like they did with the mortgages back in 2008. It was really very gross. I just didn't think it was great for radio. But there was one thing she talked about that I've been talking about on this show for a while when it comes to Americans, their money, and what I see coming next. She started talking about this, Federal Reserve bank accounts. Now, this woman is as comptroller of the nation's currency. She certainly does have some power. She sounds like, with all of her grand ideas, that Congress really isn't much of an issue. She can get done whatever she wants to do. But I do believe that we are going to see a move towards these Federal Reserve bank accounts. I battled Trump supporters for years when they were telling me he's taking down the Fed. And I was looking around saying, I got to tell you, the Fed looks like it's getting more and more powerful by the month under Donald Trump. And I believe I was right. The last 18 months have shown us the Fed is monetizing everything. They've never been bigger. Their balance sheet has never been larger. They've never been involved in more things than they are right now and all through Trump's final year. But I think they are not done yet. And this is, again, maybe a little wonky. Maybe this isn't for everybody. But I'm telling you, you just need to kind of have your radar up for this idea of we're going to not have private bank accounts anymore, but we'll all just have Federal Reserve accounts. I'll let her explain to you what she thinks we'll see soon.
Imagine what would it be like if instead of being just a public option for deposit banking, this would be actually the full transition. In other words, there will be no more private bank deposit accounts, and all of the deposit accounts will be held directly at the Fed. And there are very interesting implications from that thought experiment, for example, with the much more direct and proactive tools of monetary policy, like helicopter money, which is, considered radical, primarily because economists really do not know how to manage the issue of what will happen in the inflationary environment when the central bank needs to contract the supply of money. How is it politically feasible for the central bank to effectively take money away from people's accounts?
Yeah. So what the plan is to get everybody set up on a Federal Reserve. They've talked about this, and we've talked about it on the show. Basically like a Fed account. It'll be an app on your phone. And when they want to pass out stimulus, they just load up your Fed account, your Fed wallet. No, the thing is that, you know, as she said, the problem is when they send out all these stimulus checks, it's inefficient, and sometimes they don't get the bang for their buck that they want. But with this, you know, what the Fed can do is they can put money into your Fed account and say, you can use this for X, Y, and Z only. You can only buy certain things, and you only have a certain amount of time to spend it. You got to spend it in the next month so they can juice economic activity when they want to. They can direct American spending, because if you don't spend it in the approved way that the government has told you to spend it, the money is actually then just withdrawn right back out of your account. For all the proponents out there of universal basic income, that's how it's going to work. If you think you're just going to get this life-improving cash each month with no strings attached, and it's just going to be a little bonus for you every month, it's never going to happen. We're seeing that fight for 15. People are getting $15 an hour now, but their lives are actually getting worse because the inflation has swamped any wage gains. And I wanted to touch one more financial thing here because I picked on Elon Musk and Tesla pretty much for several years on this show now because I knew that they were a ward of the state. I love innovation. We're not ready for an all-electric future by any stretch of the imagination, even though they're trying to shoehorn us into that. But Elon Musk just doesn't impress me much because he's been a ward of the state. He has made his money from the government, largely. He's not some capitalist that just had a dream and went out and chased it beyond all odds and was just wildly successful. I cheer that. It just has not been the story of Tesla. I'm going to read a little bit about that. I did feel bad the other day. Tesla stock came back down. I reported last week or week before last that Elon Musk had made, and that's such a bad term, made. Elon Musk's net worth went up by $50 billion in a day. That's a pretty good day, isn't it? But the Tesla stock retraced a little bit. And in 2 days, he lost that $50 billion. And I was talking to a friend. I said, I feel like I should Venmo Elon some money. I mean, certainly there's nobody in America that could lose $50 billion of net worth in a single day and not be in some serious trouble, right? Of course, he's not. He's worth hundreds of billions of dollars. But here is the skinny on Tesla. And I'm just going to tell you, this came from CNN. And it's true. I mean, I've studied these things, looked at all of the tax credits and things that have gone into building Tesla. And they wrote a piece on it kind of explaining a little bit about it. And environmental regulations require companies that are not meeting emission standards to pay fines or buy credits generated by companies that comply with the rules. And no one has more of these credits to sell than all-electric Tesla. Between 2008 and the first half of 2019, sales of regulatory credits generated more than $2 billion that was crucial to the company's survival. Tesla was at the verge of bankruptcy. Elon Musk went on a series of tweets at one point. I can't remember when it was, 2018, 19. He said, oh, yeah, we were on the verge of bankruptcy a little while ago. He wasn't selling that many cars. He was having bad production issues. Since I've come on air, he's been circling the drain, but to the rescue. $2 billion in these ridiculous carbon credits. And the increased car sales ever since have resulted in additional credits for the Tesla that Tesla sold for another $3 billion since June of 2019. This is not a car company. This is a company that is on this gravy train of carbon credit trading into all of the greenies out there. To all of the people on the left who believe that this climate change is all about the health of the planet and making the world inhabitable for our children. No, this is what it's about. It's about the elites making billions of dollars in these trading markets. This $3 billion allowed the company to show profits sooner than it would have without the credits, lifting the value of its stock. In fact, it wasn't until the second quarter of this year that Tesla reported more net income than it got from regulatory credit sales. See, Elon Musk may have a great product. I've never ridden in a Tesla. I understand they're nice when they're not in flames. But he's not a capitalist. The guy didn't create a better mousetrap, sell a bunch of it, and become the $200 billion man. No, he has had his company saved over and over again by endless money printing and these ridiculous carbon credits. Just want to make sure everybody understands. When you see this captain of industry, know that these guys are tied to our Wall Street and government handouts, bailouts. That's the only reason Tesla even exists right now.
Your arms around me, I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding, I need your love so much.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I probably should have left maybe the Fed wallet stuff and this next story for Tech Tuesday, but I wanted to get to it, and I want to thank Bart for sending me this information last week. I ran across this that reminded me of it. I can't remember one day I had this and never got around to it, but here's something else that's coming our way when it comes to it's like banking or privacy, we're seeing these vaccine passports. They're starting to roll these things out here in the United States, but they're doing it under the guise of other things. This is actually the state of Utah.
Utah's driver license division is set to start a pilot with mobile driver's licenses and IDs. The mobile IDs will be stored on an app which is being called Secure by the division's director, Chris Karras.
We wanted to make sure the technology was at a place that it really could facilitate that level of security. And we believe that it's at that stage now.
This will change the way Utahns travel, bank, buy alcohol, and comply with traffic stops. A big difference to the physical licenses or ID cards is you can choose what information you share. For example, the digital ID would let you verify your age without giving away your home address or vice versa.
Wow, that just sounds great. How handy.
The mobile credential lets you facilitate the transaction, but only share what's necessary for it so that you get some control back over your data.
Right now it's being tested with 100 people to start, but the DLD hopes to open the pilot to as many as 10,000 Utahns by mid to late summer. The driver license division has until January 1st, 2022 to be ready to start making the digital licenses unless they show that the pilot has been unsuccessful.
And what do you think would probably be involved in this new digital record that you keep on your phone, your driver's license, your vaccine status? And this is how they're gonna sneak this thing in. When I come back, I'm going to play what's going on in Mississippi. Now, that was Utah, kind of an easy explanatory clip. But I've also got an interview here with our own, what's the guy's name? Sean Tindall. Am I getting that right? It's the Mississippi Department of Safety. Yeah, Sean Tindall announced that later this month, the state will be rolling out a new mobile ID program that will enable citizens to digitally possess their driver's license and vaccination cards, while also allowing law enforcement to access their identity remotely by Bluetooth. We'll listen to, I haven't even heard this interview yet either. I just pulled it up during the last break. We'll listen to Sean Tindall tell us about the great new digital ID for the state of Mississippi. Stay with me. I don't know what the percentage of people is that are going to are quick to adopt, you know, whatever is most convenient. I think there's an awful lot of people that will rush to a cashless society because cash is such a pain, and I use my debit card most of the time anyway. So now is the time to tell your friends, hey, you may not want to consider that. I mean, there needs to be a serious pushback against things like cashless economy and just more and more digitization of our lives. So I played that story from Utah, but it is coming to Mississippi. I pulled this up during a break. I haven't even had a chance to listen to it, but if he doesn't get to the points that are in this story about Sean Tindall at our own Mississippi Department of Public Safety and what they're planning on rolling out with the digital ID here in Mississippi, I've found quotes here that I assume were taken from this piece, but if not, I'll tell you about them. You know, some of it sounds incredibly creepy, and this is rolling out in Mississippi very soon.
Digital identification program coming to the Magnolia State this month. And here to tell us more about this new option, Public Safety Commissioner Sean Tindall. Sean, thank you so much for waking up with us this morning, because I understand you and your office have been very busy at trying to expand access for driver's licenses and IDs. Tell us a little bit about what this mobile ID program is all about. We've been hearing about it for some time.
Well, in the 2020 legislative session, the legislators passed a bill that brought a lot of revisions to the Driver Services Bureau at the Department of Public Safety, and included in that was a mandate that we establish some form of mobile ID. So we've been hard at work the last couple of years trying to get this pilot program going, and it should be ready to go November 18th. And citizens of the state will be able to utilize a mobile ID that'll be an app on their phone. And they'll be able to take it and use it just like they would their regular ID. And we're also working with the Department of Health to include the COVID card with it. Oh. If you've got a COVID vaccination card, you can also include that on the app. And in the future, we're hoping that we'll have like a Mississippi wallet. Louisiana has a similar feature right now. where you can hold all your state certifications and licenses. If you're a realtor, you can put your realtor's license on there. And so this is just the beginning right now with our ID cards, our driver's license. But in the future, we're hoping that we'll be able to put a lot more into the app.
So you can do your hunting license, your fishing license, your realtor license, all of the state privileges can be on your ID as they grant you more and more just privileges. They're none of them rights. You don't have a right to just go out and hunt, feed your family, which it sounds like with inflation and supply chain stuff, there may be a lot of people out there that just need to hunt to survive, but the state will grant you that permission. I mean, you'll have one little repository to make sure that you are up to date on all of your state permissions.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to make everything very accessible. And you've already made so much progress with improving the driver's license process with the Skip the Line program, award-winning program there. So hat off to you for that. But how in the future will this mobile ID play into, or will it have a role in renewing driver's licenses? Will that also help that process even further?
It's our goal that you'll be able to renew your driver's license by utilizing the app itself. So you won't even have to come into a driver's service station anymore to renew. You'll be able to take the picture with your phone and just renew your driver's license from the convenience of your home. For those that obviously still need to come into a driver's station for whatever reason, those will still be available. But one of the things that we've tried to focus on is expanding our digital footprint when it comes to driver services. And in the future, there'll be some minimization of our physical footprint. But by expanding our digital options, people will be able to get in quicker and do more from the convenience of their own home.
Sean, I want to shift gears just in our final seconds as we are talking with you this morning. I have to ask about also expanding our law enforcement footprint across the state.
All right, well, I want to focus in on this. He didn't cover some of this stuff. From a law enforcement perspective, it will allow a law enforcement officer approaching the car to interact via Bluetooth with that phone so they can know exactly who they're dealing with before they get to the car. I mean, all of these things on first blush, you know, all of these kinds of things just sound all positive. You don't have to wait in a DMV line. How great is that? There's a couple other things on here. Let me see if I can find these. There was one about getting your image. Oh yeah, well there's the vaccinated. You can have the vaccine cards on these wallets or on your digital ID. According to Tyndall, the mobile ID program will let, quote, citizens of the state, quote, have the ability to utilize a mobile ID that'll have an app on their phone the same weight as the regular one. Where in the world was this thing about getting your head tilt? It's going to take a picture of you and get a facial recognition of you. I'm sure they've already got this through the DMV anyway. Yeah, here it is. Referring to the security of these programs, the Apple, who's working on this with several other states, on these programs. I don't think ours is an Apple-based. We weren't in the list of states there, but Apple explained that as an additional security step, users will be prompted to complete a series of facial and head movements during the setup process to have their identity properly verified within the system's facial recognition and gesture recognition software. I got to tell you, I mean, these are those kinds of things. It's kind of like the Patriot Act. You know, when they sell these things, I mean, how great is it that they can just spy on everything and catch those rascally terrorists as they are communicating across any modes of communication? And so there's always these benefits to these things. I mean, they wrap up these turds in very nice wrapping, and so everybody pays attention to the sparkly stuff on the outside. But you can just imagine how these things will be abused. Particularly as you get, I mean, the idea we've got to store all of these licenses, you know, to keep all of our privileges with the state, and this is going to be on your phone, that a law enforcement officer can just walk up and Bluetooth and, well, let's see, is he vaccinated? He's fishing. Has he got a fishing license? And you can just imagine as more and more privileges are rolled out, what if the police can just swing by a restaurant? You know, there's more COVID restrictions, because there will be, for COVID or climate change. Too many people gathered in there. They just swing by your house, do a quick scan of the house. Oh my gosh, we just got 38 hits of phones in there, and 17 of the people inside the home are unvaccinated. Woo! Get a paddy wagon. So this idea of, you know, making everything easier for law enforcement, there certainly would be some benefits to that in some significant areas, I'm sure. But, man, we just don't think these things through. And it's all being tied to this phone, which I tell you, I'm getting further and further away from. If I didn't text so much, and I'm guilty, I am a texter. Kind of got drug into texting. I like a good phone conversation. But if it wasn't for texting, I think I'd be back at a flipped phone. But I'm not doing that push 9 three times to get a Z. I'm not going through all that again. So I find myself tethered to this thing. But I got to tell you, these kinds of things should be resisted. He said November 18th. What is today, the 15th? This is Thursday this thing rolls out. I had no idea that this is where we were headed. But it is happening, and it's happening fast. It's happening here in Mississippi, too. He gave you all the benefits of it. It just sounds fantastic, but the opportunities for abuse of having all of this stuff from your medical records to your facial recognition and your head twitch signature on your mobile phone, this does not lead down a path towards freedom.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. We're going to talk about some pandemics and vaccine stuff today. And there's very interesting something I ran across. It was put together by a sociologist called the Chart of Coercion. This is by Albert Biederman, done in 1957, to illustrate the methods of Chinese and Korean torture on American prisoners of war from the Korean War. The chart lists 8 chronological general methods of torture that will psychologically break an individual. I had never heard of this before, the Chart of Coercion, but we'll look at those 8 things and tell me they haven't been rolled out on the American people over the last 2 years. I mean, it's like they were reading this thing to try to figure out exactly how to break us all psychologically. You know, I had a long conversation last night with a friend. We do a lot of vigorous debates. And the bottom line is, you know, I just really wonder, do you, at this point on almost any issue, do you change anybody's mind on anything? I have to cling to the idea that when there are people out there who are open-minded, when they hear other things, they go, huh, that's interesting, I didn't know that. And then maybe they research it and they change a conclusion that they have on something. But by and large, people do not want to ever admit that they are wrong. People do not ever really want to leave their tribe. It's just really head-banging stuff to try to get people to look at things. But it's still pretty fascinating to kind of, I don't know, document exactly what we're seeing and what we're going through, particularly when it comes to these shots. I'll start with a in memoriam today. There was an obituary. It was in California. It's on the site HabingFamily.com. This is a Habing Family Funeral Home. Got a memorial park. It's on their website. Was posted a obituary that, as of right now, I could still pull up the link. I don't know if they are actually censoring obituaries also, but apparently the guy who passed away, name was Michael Mike Anthony Granada. He died on November 1st of this year. A longtime resident of Gilroy, California. It said Mike was adamant that people know what happened to him that caused his early and unexpected death. So they list a message from Mike. And here it is, quote, "Many nurses and non-nursing staff begged me and my wife to get the truth out to the public about the COVID-19 vaccines because the truth of deaths from the vaccine was being hidden within the medical profession. I promised I would get the message out. So here's my message. I was afraid of getting the vaccine for the fear I might die. At the insistence of my doctor, I gave in to pressure to get vaccinated. On August 17th, I received the Moderna vaccine and started feeling ill 3 days later. I never recovered, but continued to get worse. I developed multi-system inflammation and multi-system failure that medical professionals could not stop. My muscles disappeared as if to disintegrate. I was in the ICU for several weeks and stabbed with needles up to 24 times a day for these several weeks while also receiving 6 or 7 IVs at the same time, continuously. It was constant torture that I cannot describe. I was no longer treated as a human with feelings and life. I was nothing more than a COVID vaccine human guinea pig, and the doctors excited to participate in my fascinating progression unto death. If you want to know more, please ask my wife. I wish I would have never gotten vaccinated. If you are not vaccinated, don't do it unless you are ready to suffer and die. Now, this is one man's experience. It's an antidote, as they say, or with a C in it. Anecdotal thing, but it is people getting out, and what I found was most striking in that, if it's true, we really don't know, to be honest with you, but it says many nurses and non-nursing staff begged me and my wife to get the truth out to the public about the COVID-19 vaccines because the truth of death from the vaccines was being hidden within the medical profession. And I think there certainly is evidence of that. Now, this is almost funny. I don't know if it's good form to follow up a tragic story like that with something that's funny. Not funny, ha-ha, but funny, oh my God. We've seen a lot of stories reported for the last week about all of these athlete deaths. Normal, young, healthy, competitive athletes dropping on fields. Now, when I do the stories, I'm always looking to kind of fact check myself. Make sure I'm not running with a narrative that fits what I think I might be seeing. Young athletes do die. Sometimes just randomly. They just drop dead on the field or they just die in their sleep. It's always tragic. But there are reports that these numbers are higher now than normal. It is an admitted side effect of these shots that it can cause circulatory problems, clottings, myocarditis, pericarditis, these kinds of things. This appears to be catching kind of a head of steam as more and more people talk about this. Several countries have now paused, I believe, in particularly the Moderna vaccine, because of heart issues for their younger people, 30 and younger. I think it might have been Norway. Maybe a couple of the Scandinavian countries have halted the vaccine for people under 30 out of these concerns, which is odd because I looked at OpenVares last night, and in the reports of myocarditis and pericarditis, Pfizer had significantly more than Moderna. But for some reason, Pfizer owns the world. Pfizer gets away with anything. You remember when they paused the Johnson & Johnson on 6 reports of heart problems? It was a big deal. They said, this shows you how vigilant we're being and taking it seriously and monitoring the safety profile of these vaccines. So they paused Johnson & Johnson after what they reported were 6 reports of heart issues. At the time, Pfizer had something already like 148. They were never even mentioned in any of the stories. So I don't know if it's lobbying, if it's just true cash being paid to people. Somehow Pfizer just continues to go. Pfizer has more reports of myocarditis and pericarditis than Moderna, but Moderna is the one that's under fire for these things. But the reason that I say it's almost funny. So strangely enough, here's the story the media just came out with last week. You may have seen this. Again, against the backdrop of people looking around and seeing young, healthy people suddenly succumb to heart attacks and blood clots and these kinds of things, the media is trying to get out ahead of that. They're a little behind, but they're going to try to hedge you off at the pass. Look over here, squirrel!
It felt as if my heart was going to explode out of my chest.
Mike Stroh smoked pot for nearly every day for 15 years in Canada,
which has been
legal for medicinal purposes for 2 decades, which explains why there is significant Canadian research into health effects of cannabis. Now, a large peer-reviewed study found that while the risk remained low, those aged 18 to 44 who used cannabis at least 4 times a month had nearly doubled the risk of heart attack over non-users. And now the news is worse for those classified as having cannabis use disorder.
These are individuals who use cannabis with a frequency that has an impact on their functional abilities, how they're functioning at home, at work, in relationships, at school.
A new analysis presented at the American Heart Association Scientific Sessions found that overall 4.1% of patients hospitalized for heart attacks also had cannabis use disorder, and the proportion nearly tripled from 2.4% in 2007 to 6.7% in 2018.
It's the weed. Don't look at the shot. It's not the shots. Just strangely enough, they've done a study and they found out that people who smoke marijuana are the reason that these young kids are having heart attacks and dying on the athletic field. I mean, this is genius. I've got to hand it to Big Pharma again. They're clever. They are clever. So they got a twofer in this story. Not only do they try to divert everyone's attention from the possible connections between these shots and these heart issues that we're seeing around the world, but they also get to bash a plant that competes directly with pharmaceutical medications for everything from depression to Parkinson's to cancers. They get to demonize weed at the same time trying to slough off this idea that young people are now having heart issues, and they're going to try to lay this on the weed. You know, I mean, they've been legalizing it in other states. This is the fear-mongering of weed use as the reason. And this plays along with the rest of the fear-mongering, and I got to tell you, conservatives, you've been falling for this for a long time. A long, long time. There's been so much fear-mongering, and I'm not a proponent of anybody running out, smoking a bunch of weed, doing heroin, doing cocaine, but the whole war on drugs is basically along this same story. Chaos will reign if you allow people to do what they want to do. You just can't have these things. And so the fear-mongering has led us on this 100-year, particularly the last 50 years of the war on drugs, just through fear-mongering, but now they're going to fear-monger on the marijuana and heart problems. As I say, it's not laughably funny, but it is equally hysterical that this is the path they've chosen. And then one other story before we get to the chart of coercion that I think is interesting. The pandemic is making us ugly, at least according to our own partners. That was the finding of a new survey published by cosmetic dermatology company Advanced Dermatology. They surveyed 1,463 people in relationships of 1 year or more. Those who responded were 51% male and 49% female with an average age of 38 years old. Among those surveyed, 2 in 3 people say, quote, their partner looks worse than they did before the pandemic started. 79% of those surveyed said their partner needs to lose some weight, 22 pounds on average, and 55% have been embarrassed by their partner's appearance in social situations. This is from the survey. 52% of respondents say their partner is dressing more casually, and 45% say their partner spends less time on grooming. So we've got, actually, according to our partners, we've all gotten uglier. You know what? 79% of us have gotten uglier. I believe the average weight gain was 26 pounds. 26 pounds for a lot of people. That's, you know, 15% people have added to their girth during the pandemic. I kind of went the other way. I definitely did some emotional eating myself. There's no doubt about it, but I certainly didn't approach 26 pounds. But we've gotten uglier. Another knock-on effect. I mean, gosh darn it, if it wasn't for the job loss and the poverty, if it wasn't for the closure and the bankruptcy of businesses, it wasn't for the terror of our children, it wasn't for the horrible mitigation efforts, it wasn't for all of the things that kept people out of the hospital from getting treatment for their problems, which are making people now, they're showing up at hospitals sicker than ever before. If it wasn't for all that, the dang response to COVID made us uglier too. That's just insult to injury. Be right back.
Menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I'll go ahead and get into this real quick here. This chart of coercion, I'd never heard of it before. Never heard of a chart of coercion. And this is, let me read the descriptor of this again. And I'm going to go through the points of it. When you start looking at what has taken place, particularly when it comes to these vaccines. Biermann's chart of coercion, also called the Biermann Principles, is a table developed by sociologist Albert Biermann in 1957 to illustrate the methods of Chinese and Korean torture on American prisoners of war from the Korean War. The chart lists 8 chronological general methods of torture that will psychologically break an individual. And, you know, we've got all these behavioral scientist involved in just all kinds of things. It's almost like focus group for the deranged. They try to figure out how to roll out policies that will do it. And if you look around the United States and say, yeah, we've been broken psychologically is an understatement at this point, as far as I'm concerned. We are accepting some of the most just the bizarre stuff, and people screaming at each other for not wearing a mask or not getting the shot or whatever it is. We've just become deranged. But here are the eight steps to break somebody psychologically. Number one is isolation. I mean, one of the first things that they did when it came to this COVID stuff is give you a stay-at-home order, right? No more workplace get-togethers, no more social gatherings, no nothing. Sit at home until we give you the all clear. So isolation is number one. Second one is monopolization of perception. Holy cow. Every single news media in the mainstream, the biggest press outlets out there, constant barrage on the news media of this being this existential threat to all of mankind. This is the most horrible thing that has ever befallen planet Earth. I mean, just across the board. This, again, is a disease. 99.7% survivable. If you're under 70 years old, it's 99.9% survivable. But the perception, and it is the monopolization of the perception, which is the medical community, all of your health authorities, all of your politicians, all of your institutions, from colleges to schools to businesses, everybody got in lockstep of this huge threat. So there was a complete monopolization of the perception of what COVID was. Number three is induced debilitation and exhaustion. And I would imagine stripping people of their jobs, stripping people of their social connections, stripping children of the normalcy of their lives. This is that induced debilitation. Number four is threats. Now, we've seen a million of these things, haven't we? Threats against churches, threats against schools, threats against anybody who opened their business, threats against people who moved about, threats against people if they didn't wear a mask. Now we've got threats against people if they don't get a shot. You lose your job, you lose the ability to travel. I mean, we've just had a long, endless stream of threats. I like this one. Number five, occasional indulgences. And this is what I believe, you know, we've talked about the mask mandates in schools a lot here, how damaging that is. And I knew that, you know, Madison County Schools, I think I said it before it happened, I think everybody could see this coming. Every now and then they'll kind of let a little steam out of the kettle. Okay, everybody can go outside for a little while. We're going to let your kids choose to not wear a mask for just a little while. They give you those little tastes of freedom again. Just when you're really at that breaking point, they, you know, kind of good cop, bad cop you. They'll let you just have a few little indulgences. The funny thing is they told you basically you had all indulgences if you got the shot originally. Remember, no mask. You can do whatever you want to. You're a superhero out in society. That didn't last very long as they realized that these shots are failing. And they've got everybody right back in the masks and right back in social distancing and right back in the rest of these things, even if they're fully vaccinated. But it's the little indulgences they give you. Just a little bit to take the pressure off. Give you a little glimmer of hope that life can return to normal. And they slam it shut again. Here's another one. Number six. Demonstrating omnipotence and omniscience. Demonstrating omnipotence and omniscience. Holy cow, if that doesn't describe what we've seen over the last 20 months, 22 months. I keep saying 18 months. I got to revise that. It's 20 months now. This thing is dragging on into 2 years. The omniscience. The science is settled. If you question Anthony Fauci, he said it himself. He said, if you question Fauci, you're questioning science. The omniscience. They know everything. Everything has been studied. They have the data in. It is X until it's no longer X, and X is proven to be wrong. And then it's X.1 is definitely, for sure, pinky swear, this is honestly the truth. It's the science. If you question it, you're nuts. And then when X.1 falls apart, it's X.2. This is the science. Don't question it. The same thing with climate change. Do the exact same thing. Number seven is degradation. And then number eight is enforcing trivial demands. Boy, does that not describe isolation, monopolization of perception, induced debilitation and exhaustion, threats, occasional indulgences, demonstrating omnipotence and omniscience, degradation, and enforcing trivial demands. Is this not exactly what we have seen go on for the past 20 months here in the United States and around the world? And that is the chart of coercion. It's from studied from Chinese and Korean torture methods on prisoners of war during the Korean War. Same tactics that they used to break people psychologically in war is what has been used in mass against humanity. I mean, line by line by line. Be right back.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. Number here, 601-879-0002. You know, I said earlier I had a debate with a friend last night. We do these once a month, twice a month. I think it keeps me on my toes because I am fact-checked in real time during these conversations. Just to tell you, because I'm tired today. I'm trying to figure out why I feel a little groggy. I looked at my phone, my debate with this friend of mine, and he is a friend. Nothing that we will get heated in conversations, but we'll end up laughing about this or that or changing the topic. I'm not going to lose a friend over any of this stuff. And he does keep me honest. He fact checks me in real time as I throw out statistics. And it's so hard with so much information. I can do 10 hours a week on here talking large. And this was largely around vaccine and COVID policy stuff. And he's not some Kool-Aid drinking leftist by any stretch of the imagination. He just ascribes a little bit more honor to the medical system than I do. So I would throw out statistics. You know, well, 40% of the people in Maryland who have died in the past 6 weeks have been vaccinated. Where'd you get that? So, well, from this former CDC director who's running the show in Maryland. So I have to go online during the course of the conversation. Pull up the clip and play it through the phone. I can hear him furiously typing away to find out if that doesn't sound believable, because all the doctors he knows have told him it's just a pandemic of the unvaccinated. So the conversation lasted last night 2 hours and 50 minutes. No wonder I'm tired today, a little mentally exhausted. 3 hours of debate and fact-checking, lifetime fact-checking. Luckily, I can withstand the vast majority of that. I did make one mistake, and I'll go ahead and tell you so you don't make the same mistake, because I don't like making mistakes because I think it hurts your credibility. And that's why I don't jump on everything that I hear immediately. That's why I didn't join the Q movement, because when you start to find out these things are false, I don't ever want to be out there having said these things. Occasionally I'll get something wrong and try to correct it, but they have added a new ingredient to the Pfizer shots for the 5 to 11-year-olds. I thought it was an like a blood thinner, an anti-heart attack thing. But I was fact-checked live on the phone last night, and I fact-checked myself at the same time. It apparently is something control acidosis. It controls the acid in kids' blood. Now, I still think it's nefarious. They're changing the formulation and putting something into these shots. Obviously, they're trying to address some kind of problem that they saw was already happening in young people, maybe in the 12 to 18 range, 12 to 17 range that they've already done. So they tweaked the formula for the 5 to 11-year-olds, and this new drug, thalidomide or something like that, does have a laundry list of potential side effects to it. It's a drug. It's not a new kind of saline. It's a drug they have put in these kids' shots. But I was wrong. I was fact-checked. I saw that I was wrong. So now I understand that this new ingredient is not necessarily based around heart attacks, but it's around, you know, acid buildup in the blood, which obviously they must think that these vaccines could cause acid buildup in children's blood. Be kind of nice if maybe they told the 12-year-olds that they've been inoculating for the past 3 months, hey, we may have made your blood acid or whatever. But anyway. It is just, it's funny. I glossed over a clip the other day when it comes to shots, though. I played this week on the Crazy Train, where I kind of got rapid fire, but I wanted to play this clip again from Ireland. You know, we're talking about the omniscience that is used to break people psychologically. What was the promise of these shots? I mean, am I crazy, or did they not tell us the way out of the pandemic is through vaccination? We've got to stop the spread. We've got to get everybody a shot so that COVID goes away. Wasn't that what we were originally told? I know for sure they told us that the shots were good 100% against hospitalizations and deaths, which is strange with Maryland reporting 40%, over 40% of the people who have died there in the past 6 weeks have been fully vaccinated. Seems to kind of pierce the 100% level that they gave us. But this Ireland clip was just really kind of amazing in the way that they are reframing the whole argument around the vaccination program. I wanted to spend a little bit more time on it because I played it again for myself this weekend as I was trying to find some other clips and ran across it. And I thought, oh my gosh, I mean, how has the story changed on these shots? Yet the push to get every single human being, and soon your animals, you understand they're coming for your pets, right? We can't leave any reservoir, that's what they call it, a reservoir for infection. They're coming after your animals. Pfizer's veterinary unit right now is working on this thing, and it's going to be included in your pet's shots by the time this thing is all said and done. My prediction. But this is Ireland, and just staggering in the way that the narrative around what this shot actually does and doesn't do has changed over the past 6 months.
Pretty staggering 99.5% of all adults over the age of 18 here in Waterford are now fully vaccinated. That's the highest vaccination rate in Ireland and thought to be among the highest anywhere in the world. Despite this, County Waterford currently has the highest COVID infection rate in the country. So why?
What's happened as restrictions have eased is there's been a gradual increase in social activity, coupled with a decrease in people taking day-to-day mitigation behaviors.
So what good is this shot? How protective is it if you still can't be around anybody? You still can't go out and socialize? You still can't take a mask off? I mean, this story just dances all around the quite obvious conclusion that the shot does not work. I mean, just listen to what they're saying. How could it be? 99.5% have gotten the jabs, and yet they have the highest outbreak in the country. How could that be? Oh, it's because they let down their guard on social distancing and mask wearing. And what? What are you talking about? What good is this shot if you still can't be around anybody?
Like keeping 2 meters from each other and wearing masks.
Science hasn't failed, according to, well, scientists. Immunologists say the vaccines were never meant to eliminate infections.
Wait, what? The vaccines were never intended to eliminate infections? What are these things for? A little bit more and I'll get to a caller. Hold on, caller.
And are performing a vital role.
What vital role? What is going? This is done with a straight face. This is Irish media, but ours is no better. What is the point of this shot? It's just driving me insane. Got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
Hey, yes, this is Buddy. I had opportunity Friday to speak to a lady from Ireland. She is stuck here because she won't take the jab.
Oh.
And she told me that her sister, and I'm going to use her terminology, went to the market and she forgot her vaccine cards. And when she got to the market, they would not let her in, and they wanted to know where were her cards, and she said they were in her car. Two militia, now I'm using her words again, walked her to her car and made her produce her cards.
Oh.
And I asked the lady, I said, well, what would happen if she didn't have cards? And she said there was a caravan, which was their terminology is, trailer, medical trailer there, and that they would have carried her there. She would have been vaccinated, her first shot, and then she would be asked to wait in a facility until her second shot was effective.
Oh my gosh. Ireland. Ireland.
No, this is Australia, the land down under.
Oh, you said, oh, I thought you said Ireland originally. This is from Australia.
Australia.
Oh, okay.
And this is what the second or third thing. I'm talking to a lady from Australia, and she can't go home.
Yeah. I mean,
and look, the whole thing is not about a virus. You know that as well as I do. It's about subjugation. We will be destroyed from within. Within two generations is what Khrushchev said, and it's on hand.
And I tell you what, this is the final push. When I come back, though, we have got some wins. So I'd want to point these. There's a couple other wins, particularly this court that's upholding the restriction on Biden's ridiculous mandates. But I don't know. Another terrifying story from Australia. God help those people down there. But apparently, from the reports I've had, a lot of people down in Australia don't really seem to have a big problem with this. It's very bizarre.
Yes, sir. But here's the biggest thing that's crippled them. They don't have a Second Amendment.
Well, yeah. I mean, that certainly is pointed to quite often. But you have to have the will to actually use your arms should you need them. And from some reports I've gotten from people who have relatives down there, they don't seem to be seeing that this is really a problem. It's just really bizarre. This is, again, that mass psychological breaking they've done of our entire world. So anyway, thanks, buddy. I appreciate the call,
yes,
man.
God bless.
You too. All right, got to take a quick break. I'll come right back. As I say, I'm going to point out these victories anytime we can find them. And one really particularly fun one from CNN. Stay with me. All right, final segment for the day. We're going to end on a high note here. There's always encouraging signs of life and freedom and resistance and fighting back and winning. There's some wins continuing around the country. We've seen a lot of people fighting against mandates. We got some people reversing mandates because people are standing up to this stuff. But I want to get to this first one. It's just beautiful. Have you seen that CNN is being bought by, I think it's Time Warner or a Warner Media? Let's see. Yeah, Warner Media is buying CNN. Apparently, they are not happy with their cratering ratings at CNN. And one guy reported, this is John Nicosia. He's a former Mediaite and IJR managing editor. He sent out a tweet with he said, "Scoop, CNN is going back to a 100% news channel. A good number of the, quote, talent/staff will be let go to align for that new mission." So a lot of on-air personalities for CNN may be pretty uncomfortable today, maybe ending the reign of Don Lemon, Chris Cuomo, Anderson Cooper, the rest of these just horrific, horrific hosts at CNN that have just led them down the drain when it comes to ratings from this most trusted news network. It's become nothing but just nonstop left-wing statist opinion. But I tell you, I was trying to think of all the people. I don't watch CNN. Almost never, ever see CNN. I haven't been in airports recently, so I don't see it there. And I was trying to remember the name of all of the hosts. Brian Stelter? He's one of my least favorites out there. So some of these people may be on the chopping block. But I pulled up, during the break, I pulled up CNN, you know, a list of CNN hosts. And I'm on the CNN.com site, /special/TV/anchors-and-reporters. And I'm scrolling through this. It's basically kind of headshots, just pictures of everybody. You know, Wolf Blitzer. It's got the whole laundry list there. But I got to tell you, as I scroll through this, I'm just saying, for a company that is so woke as CNN is, there's a lot of ugly white dudes, but all of the women here seem to be pretty attractive. Now, not mentally or psychologically for most of them, but I'm scrolling down through here. Erin Burnett, Anna Cabrera, Kate Bolden. I mean, these are some nice-looking women, and this is the same case if you watch ABC News, which I don't necessarily recommend, but it has been one that I've tuned into at 5:30. Terrible, horrible, opinionated, slanted, misleading broadcast, to be sure. But you watch the ABC representatives. They don't have a whole lot of people look like they came off the street or, you know, out in the flyover country. No, these are glamour models. I mean, ABC has one of the, that Fox is well known for this too, but Fox kind of plays it up. I mean,
fox in their legs. That certainly is well known. But I'm looking at CNN, this woke company, and I'm not seeing a whole lot of, transgender daddies on this thing. It's just kind of a laundry list of ugly white dudes, and they only tolerate some pretty darn attractive ladies. I'm just saying. Anyway, some CNN people on the chopping block. That will be beautiful to see. Don Lemon, Chris Cuomo. It's going to be tough for them to find work after that. The court did, Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals down in New Orleans, I think on Friday, reaffirmed their ruling to stop the Biden mandate. Now, the guy that I had my extended debate with last night is an attorney, and it was a bit of a word salad when he was explaining to me exactly what takes place now. But apparently this has stopped this private employer mandate around the country unless another circuit of appeals finds in a different ruling that it can continue, at which case it would be sent to the Supreme Court. But as of right now, my understanding is the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals down in New Orleans has reaffirmed, and so Joe Biden's mandate that companies with over 100 employees mandate vaccines for their employers is off the table right now. So that's actually a very big victory. I'm almost scared to know if this thing ends up going to the Supreme Court. It was Amy Coney Barrett, Trump's gal, who refused to hear one of the cases from a group of nurses, I believe it was, just a month or so ago. So I don't know which way the Supreme Court would go. I have very little faith in them. But as contemptuous as I am for the American system, I will say this. Just talking to Buddy about Australia, listening to what's going on in Ireland, and we've seen the draconian stuff that's gone on in Canada and England. The United States has fared, even in blue states, it has not been as authoritarian, and we may have our courts to thank for a little bit of that. It's not anything near what it should be. Don't get me wrong. Not an endorsement. Talking to this attorney last night, he said, oh, the courts are a little slow, but they'll end up doing the right thing. I have no faith in that, but it may have kept us, at least right now, dangling still from the thread of freedom here in the United States. So we'll see how this winds its way through the courts, but that was a big victory to stop the Biden mandates of private employers. And this also begs the question, for all of these private employers who rushed out to do this and just shrugged their shoulders and said, well, the president told us we have to. Oh, how sick is that? How sick is that that they gave up so quickly that many of them rolled out their own mandates for their employees before this thing had even been tested in court or really even the ink had been laid in OSHA regulations? I believe OSHA now has come out with regulations on these things, according to Joe Biden's unconstitutional mandate. But they cannot enforce them right now, according to this Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. So to all the employers out there, don't let your employer get away with this idea. Well, we have to. Biden says so. It's a law. It's not a law. It's been stopped. And you'll know kind of the true intent of your employer should they continue to say, well, we still have to do it because it's probably going to, whatever. They have got full cover to not mandate for their employees if they don't want to. There's also a place out in radical California, their mandate was beaten as well.
The city of Oroville is getting national attention tonight for announcing that they will not follow controversial orders issued by the governor or the president. The fight stems from a number of federal and state pandemic protection mandates, and tonight we're getting answers on why city leaders are taking this step.
Oroville city leaders are launching a resolution revolution.
Motion carries.
In a 6-1 vote, the city council declared Oroville a constitutional republic city.
This mandate is not saying we're against laws or for anarchy.
Vice Mayor Scott Thompson saying it's the city's effort to send a strong message to federal and state leaders.
I think it's time for us to draw a line in the sand and say enough is enough.
The resolution resolves to not enforce, quote, any executive orders issued by the state of California or by the United States federal government that are overreaching or clearly violate our constitutionally protected rights. The move comes amid the controversy over closing businesses during the pandemic, along with mask and vaccine mandates.
We're not talking about one mandate that's been pushed on us recently. It's a barrage of mandates.
This is disgusting. It makes me mad.
Here we go. Oh, no, they're going to kill us all.
Lisa West is among the residents who oppose the resolution.
I think that we all believe in in applying the law and agreeing and following the law.
No, we don't all agree. I got to tell you that right now. Martin Luther King didn't agree either. So it's your moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws.
And this is just ridiculous.
So does Oroville have the right to disregard state and federal orders?
Ultimately, this would be determined by a court.
UC Davis law professor Lisa Pruitt says the resolution may not have any binding legal authority.
The strong presumption would be that the city of Oroville does not have the power to do this. I see this as primarily a gesture.
A constitutional conflict with these city leaders fighting for more local control.
It makes a statement that says, you know, enough's enough. We're done. We're tired.
Yeah. So people are fighting back. Well, I guess we will find out. Sounds like that may end up in the courts itself and whether a local jurisdiction can do that. But I would imagine this is where the sheriffs become especially important. Wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have a bunch of statists around here, particularly in central Mississippi? I don't know if there's any group. I don't have a lot of faith that Mayor Mary out in Madison would ever buck the trend of shots for all should the word come down from Tate Reeves, who's has Thomas Dobbs' arm inserted into him, moving his mouth when it comes to these kinds of things. I don't think Mayor Mary would stand up. It's only we certainly know Jackson would go along with whatever. Enthusiastically, they might not even wait for mandates at the city of Jackson. But it's nice to see there are local places here, so we'll need to start compiling a list of these things, and we may all have to pack up and try to go find our safe space. That's all right. I like the people that I'm associating with in the resistance movement. We'll make any town a fun town. That's all the time I got. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.